why has it been so difficult to have had successful clinical trial outcomes?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, so the last new drug that was approved for Alzheimer's disease was in 2003. So now it's 2015, so it's been 12 years since any new compounds have been advanced in Alzheimer's disease. And I really think that reflects our fundamental misunderstanding of the disease. So unlike other diseases where people have a really good handle on what causes it, with Alzheimer's disease, we really don't have that. I mean, there's lots of hypotheses with good background information to support them, but when they get to the clinic, they don't seem to work. So as you know, the primary hypothesis for Alzheimer's disease is what's called the amyloid cascade hypothesis, which was postulated back in the late 1980s. So we've been working on that hypothesis for a very long time. And, you know, in the last probably 5 years, we've gotten to the stage where we've put those in large clinical trials to directly test that model. And unfortunately, none of those large phase, what are called phase three efficacy trials have met their primary endpoints. So that means they all failed. So I think the field is really struggling now with, you know, what really does cause Alzheimer's disease and how can we tackle that best.
So many times family caregivers are held back from investigating clinical trials due to the myths, the misunderstanding, the misinformation surrounding participation. Can we talk about that a bit?
Right. I think that's a big problem in the field, particularly in Alzheimer's disease, where there are a lot of these, as you're right, myths or misconceptions about what it is to enroll in a clinical trial. And I think, you know, that the field has suffered over the last 5 years by trying to recruit patients. You know, we're running our own study right now, and we have a very difficult time getting patients to come in to participate in these clinical trials. And I think really dismissing some of these myths is critical for not only, you know, our study, but every study in the field that really needs these participants to, like I said, we really need to figure out what the correct path forward is in the treatment of Alzheimer's disease.
What would you say the top five myths are?
So I think one, you know, we experience when we try and recruit patients is that they believe that there are plenty of volunteers or that they don't need to come in and participate in the clinic because lots of other people will do it. And I can tell you that's not the case at all. I mean, us and everyone else who's doing clinical trials in Alzheimer's disease has the same problem, and that same main problem is recruitment. So, you know, I'm just telling people who are listening, you know, that this is not the case, that there are lots of people lining up to be in these trials. It's the opposite. So that's the number one, I think. Second one is, you know, that it's too late, that my disease has advanced too far, nothing's really going to work, so why should I bother? The person you're caring for is, you know, you think is too far progressed in the disease. But again, you know, there are treatments for every stage of the disease now. You know, donepezil is approved for both mild and moderate, and Namenda is approved for severe Alzheimer's disease. And there are trials running for all stages of the disease right now. So, you know, there are hope for people with, you know, mild to moderate to severe Alzheimer's disease. So that shouldn't be a reason why you don't participate in a trial. The third top one is that, you know, clinical trials are dangerous, that you're going to be exposed to some dangerous compound that may have long-term effects on your well-being. And, you know, while there are, you know, there are inherent risks in clinical trials because you are doing participating in a trial with an investigational new drug, you know, all of these investigational new drugs have to go through a rigorous testing procedure before they can enter the clinic. So this is a big part of the job of the FDA. So, you know, for any new investigational drug, you have to file what's called an IND. So it's an investigational new drug application with the FDA. And then when you go to the FDA, you have to present them with all your safety data that you've accumulated over the years, both from animal studies, in vitro studies, you know, carcinogenicity, toxicology studies, lots and lots of studies that you present to the FDA. And they look it all over, and then they, in collaboration with the sponsor, will say, okay, this is safe to go into humans based on your data. So, you know, it really is a pretty safe process to go into a clinical trial. And, you know, you get excellent medical care when you're in a clinical trial. You don't require any, you know, health insurance or anything. You'll get provided with that health care at the clinic at the site that you're at. And so another thing that sort of, I think, discourages people, let's call this number four, is that you will lose your primary care physician when you go into a clinical trial. And so this is not the case. Typically, you're in that clinical trial and you're going to that specific site just for that study. Yes, you do get healthcare there, and you get the added benefit of you usually working with a subject matter expert. You know, in our case, you know, for Alzheimer's disease, you're working with a physician who has dealt with Alzheimer's disease for 10, 20 years and is participating in this trial because they want to see new treatments. But this doesn't mean you have to not see your primary care physician. So you're encouraged, you know, and almost every study will encourage you to keep seeing your normal primary care physician, get medical advice from him or her, and then maintain your normal schedule with your doctor. It's called the fifth one, is that you might get placebo, right? And you won't get the investigation of a new drug, and you're just wasting your time because you're going to the clinical trial and you'll get placebo and you won't ever see the active. So for almost every trial now, and it's almost every ethics board requires you to have an open label phase for your study. So for example, our study, we have an open label phase. So once you complete the what's called a double blind phase of the study, where no one knows if you're on active or placebo, you can then go into the open label phase of the study. So in the open label phase of the study, everybody gets the investigational drug, and you get that for free for, you know, whatever period of time the sponsor decides that you'll need it. And, you know, in our case, you get it for 6 months, and that's pretty typical in the industry. You get it for the same amount of time that the study lasts for. So I think those are sort of the top five, I would say, reasons people, or myths and reasons that people are afraid of getting into clinical trials. But really, none of those should stop anyone from participating in a clinical trial, because, you know, that's your chance to really advance the field and really help us all develop new drugs for Alzheimer's disease.
You have a personal connection to this disease because your mother was living with Alzheimer's. Has that affected or influenced your work?
Oh, yeah, tremendously. I would like to say, you know, I made some amazing discovery in the lab, and that's what prompted me to move on and to work on Alzheimer's disease. But that's not really the way it went. You know, it really started at a Cracker Barrel restaurant in Middletown, New York, where I went, you know, we went back to visit my mom for the holidays, and we took her out to dinner, and, you know, we went to the Cracker Barrel. And you could tell definitely something was wrong with mom. You know, she couldn't remember things. She would repeat questions to us. I remember when we left the restaurant, she forgot her purse. Things, you know, it was something was definitely wrong. So subsequent follow-ups from that, you know, we found that, yeah, she had the diagnosis of mild Alzheimer's disease at the time. Previously, I'd been working in a different sort of area. I've been working on sort of the genetics of aging. And once, you know, I saw this personal connection, you know, I think like a lot of people, I became very vested in, you know, trying to find new treatments and therapies for this disease. So I really, from that point on, shifted my research focus to exclusively Alzheimer's disease.
Can we talk about the work you're doing?
Absolutely. So, you know, after my mom was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, I began to really pore over the literature. And, you know, there were some parallels with the current work I was doing in sort of aging research that really pointed to, you know, changes in sort of glucose and insulin metabolism in not only aging, but also in Alzheimer's disease. So when I was sort of researching it, I came across a whole series of papers that demonstrated that in the brains of an Alzheimer's disease patient, they begin to lose the ability to metabolize glucose. Now, glucose is like sugar, right? It's what you get when you eat any sort of carbohydrate. Your body will convert that to glucose. Glucose turns out to be the primary fuel for your brain. So your brain runs almost exclusively on sugar all the time. And in Alzheimer's disease, they can see these patterns of declines in the ability of the brain's ability to utilize glucose. So this is a, you know, a big problem for the brain because it really relies primarily on glucose for fuel. Then, you know, if you back then, this was back in, you know, the late 80s, early 90s, that the primary thinking around that was, well, you're losing glucose metabolism because you're losing both neuronal activity and you're just losing nerve cells, right? The brain, the cells are disappearing, therefore they don't use glucose. But, you know, really at the time I thought, well, this is another way we can tackle the disease. So I really focused my research efforts. As I said, they sort of gelled pretty well with what I was doing in the lab at the time. So sort of I came up with this hypothesis, right, that, well, if the brains of an Alzheimer's patient is having difficulty metabolizing glucose, is there a different fuel that we can give them that maybe they can use in place of glucose? So it turns out that alternative fuel are what are called ketone bodies, right? So ketone bodies are these small little four-carbon fatty acids that your body produces naturally when it's running low on glucose. So, for example, when you wake up in the morning, your body has started to make a little bit of ketone bodies. Right? It's starting to tap into your fat reserves to make ketone bodies because you haven't eaten overnight and your blood glucose is a little low, so your body starts to mobilize ketone bodies. If you were to continue to not eat, right, for a couple of days, then your body would really start to tap into these into your fat reserves to make lots and lots of ketone bodies. And one of the primary tasks of the ketone bodies is to provide fuel for your brain when it's running low on glucose. So anyone who's ever done like an Atkins diet knows this very well, because that's one of the signs that you're in what they call fat burning mode. So in an Atkins diet, you eat very few carbohydrates, which really stimulates the production of ketone bodies. So the thought I had was, well, okay, if the brains of an Alzheimer's patient is not really metabolizing glucose very well, what if we give it ketone bodies? Maybe that will substitute for glucose and provide an alternative energy source for your brain. So your brain is kind of like a hybrid car, right? It can run on glucose or it can run on electricity. So we really saw in Alzheimer's disease, okay, that car is not being able to run on gasoline very well. Maybe if we give it more electricity, it'll run better. So that's sort of the analogy we use with the brain in our approach to Alzheimer's disease. If it's not running well on glucose, let's give it some ketones and see if that helps it work a little better.
What are you learning? What have you learned? What can you share?
Right. So sort of the first study that we did was we wanted to sort of directly test this hypothesis. So it turns out there are pretty easy ways to induce ketosis without having to have people fast or greatly restrict their carbohydrate and protein intake. And you can do that by administration of these very specialized fats, what are called medium-chain triglycerides, or MCTs. So these have been used in the sort of specialized nutrition field for quite some time. And it's well known that they were ketogenic. So the first study we did in collaboration with a researcher named Suzanne Kraft, who at that time was at the University of Washington. And so what we basically wanted to do was to test, we induce a mild state of ketosis in someone with mild to moderate Alzheimer's disease, does this improve their cognitive performance? So this is the first study we did, and we published this back in 2004. And actually we were able to demonstrate the proof of concept for the hypothesis. So when we induced a mild state of ketosis in these patients, we did improve their cognition very rapidly. Within 90 minutes of administration, they were doing about 1.5 points better on their ADAS-COG scores than they were when they were taking the placebo. So we were very encouraged by those early results with the sort of induction of ketosis, which really suggested that because it worked so quickly, that we were providing sort of an alternative energy source to the brain in Alzheimer's disease.
What's the process of the trial? How long is it going on for, and what are you looking for that you can share with me?
So subsequent to that earlier trial, we did another one. We administered the MCTs for 90 days. This was done at 23 sites here in the U.S., We used as our outcome measure what's called the Alzheimer's Disease Assessment Scale, Cognitive Subdomain. And I'll refer to that as ADAS-COG. So in that study, again, we showed that after 90 days of administration, a certain subset of the patients were responded very well to the treatment and improved their cognitive performance compared to the placebo group. So now, you know, what we want to do is demonstrate this in a larger trial setting. So we have a new sort of formulation of that original MCT mix, which we call AC1204. And so now we're running our large phase 3 trial, which we refer to as the NOURISH Alzheimer's disease trial, or NOURISH AD. So that is ongoing now. We have about 66 sites in the U.S. We're enrolling mild to moderate Alzheimer's disease patients. So these are patients, you know, who have, you know, memory complaints, and even the moderates are pretty impaired in their memory and their activities of daily living. So we are accepting all of those patients in our site now, and we anticipate to enroll for probably another year or so to meet our requirements for the study.
How do we find out more about the study?
The easiest way is to go to our study website, and that's www.ad-trial.com. And there's also a number they can call. The number is 1-866-405-9998. You know, we don't know for certain if this treatment works until we really test it in a fairly large number of people. So that's really the goal of this study, is to really, you know, get better evidence that this treatment actually works.
What would the one most important piece of advice be that you'd like to share with Alzheimer's caregivers?
My overarching message, I think, is I think people need to get involved. Yeah, the funding is low for Alzheimer's disease. Clinical trials are having difficulty recruiting people. You know, I know from personal experience it's very difficult to be a caregiver for someone with Alzheimer's disease. Mm-hmm. So I know it takes a lot of time and effort. But I do think, you know, there is hope on the horizon, but we really all need to kind of pitch together. One thing you can easily do that won't cost you anything, may actually help you, is to go on to, you know, clinicaltrials.gov, look for clinical sites in your area and sign up for a clinical trial. This is going to help everybody in the long run for us to really beat this disease.